This is Newsroom North. The aim of this podcast is to connect journalists in disparate media outlets in Northern BC and compare stories, share tips, and lift the curtain for listeners who want to know more about the people making the news. Newsroom North is hosted on CICK Smithers Community Radio at 93.9 FM and found on smithersradio.com.
All right, welcome back to another edition of Newsroom North. I am Dan Messick, and of course, joined here today...
Mariska Bucker.
And?
Amanda Follett-Hosgood.
Right on. Good to see you both. Thanks for coming on in and doing this once more. Today, we are live, if you couldn't tell, at the wonderful time of 4:44. But we got a lot of interesting stories going on, and so let's dive right in. First, Mariska, this is your first time on the show. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little about what you've been up to.
Okay, well, this week I've been working on a feature about the United Church in Smithers. So their building is up for sale right now, which I think a lot of people were questioning, is United Church closing down? Where are they going? You know, all of these questions. And I had a chance to go there and meet with the Reverend there. And she also had some members of her congregation who have been there for like 50, 60, probably longer years. So that was really cool to like talk to these people. And they aren't sort of going anywhere. They just want to sell the building, and they're currently renting space from another church, which I think works out really well for them. They're just like an aging congregation. There's about 25 people who worship every Sunday, and they just don't have the time or the energy to maintain the building. Hmm. The building's a little bit older. I think it was built in the 50s or 60s, around there. And they just want to put their energy into what they say they're called to do, and not be landlords, sort of, so to speak.
Indeed.
Yeah, so it was really cool. So I got a tour of the building, and it's huge. Like, there's so much space there. There's a beautiful kitchen in the basement. Like, there was just, like, my mind is just going with all these opportunities that this building could be.
Isn't it a commercial kitchen?
I think it is.
I would think that alone would be, like, a huge asset to somebody.
Yeah, and I think they did have somebody renting it out at one point as, like, sort of a catering business. Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, like there's some economic benefits definitely to that building. But yeah, there's a lot of history there, which is really cool. Like the United Church, they kind of started in, I think, 1906. There was like the first missionary that came here. So yeah, they've been around for a long time and they aren't, I guess, going anywhere. But yeah.
Now, this is the United Church that is just over here, is it not?
Yeah, it's 8th and Queen.
8th and Queen.
Yeah, and it's like a prominent corner, like with the bell building. Yes, and that bell actually has a cool story too. It's 300 pounds and it came from Germany. It took 3 months, or no, Belgium, sorry.
Oh, Belgium, okay.
3 months to get here. And somebody who used to own a mine on Hudson Bay Mountain actually purchased the bell for the church. So it's got some history too, and the congregation right now doesn't even know what to do with it because they don't really have anywhere to put it.
Does it still work?
Yes.
They can ring it?
Yes. Yeah, and I got to go up in the bell tower and check it out. And yeah, it's pretty cool.
How old's the building?
I think it was made in like the 1950s or 60s. So they used, the United Church used to be on the corner where the liquor warehouse is, like Queen and Broadway.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they moved out of there to build this church here because they needed a bigger space. So it's just kind of crazy with the times too. Like at one point they need to make, you know, bigger buildings to house, you know, their worshipers, and now they need to downsize. So
yeah, and they've already moved locations.
Yes, yeah. So the building is empty, and they're just kind of getting rid of stuff right now. So yeah, it's almost sad to see like a little piece of history kind of going.
So who's interested in the building?
She said they had a few like little kind of things going on, but nothing concrete, and she wouldn't give me any more information about that. So. Mm. Yeah, but yeah, there's definitely so much opportunity there.
Yeah, there's a few of these buildings around for sure in Smithers that are kind of reaching that point now, upkeep and whatnot.
Yeah, you would have to put money into it for sure, but the opportunity's there.
Yeah, little piece of Smithers history.
Yeah, and I even asked the Reverend, like, what are you going to do with that giant cross that's on the outside? Because whoever buys a building, maybe they want to keep it there, maybe not. But yeah, what do you do with it? Where does this all go? And she's like, we don't know yet. So I don't know. We'll see.
Mm.
But yeah.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah. I think it'll be a cool story.
Well, thanks for that. That's an interesting update. Mm-hmm. We will want to hear more if something does come of that and it gets new life at some point. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned one other thing, which I think has all been on our minds. We have federal politics that are hot ticket right now. Looks like an election will be called this weekend on Sunday, more than likely. And we may be voting in the next few weeks.
30 to 45 days, I think, is what we
that
have.
The end of April.
Yeah.
Yeah, around the 28th of April, if it's a shorter end of the spectrum.
Which I think it will be. That would be my guess.
A shotgun, shotgun election.
A little whip election, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I'll ask Amanda, what have you been kind of looking into? Because this is obviously going to, once the writ is dropped, going to consume most of the news cycle. What have you been taking a look at lately?
Yeah, my focus has been, I haven't dove into the election quite yet, but done a few stories related to U.S. politics and tariffs. A couple of them, you know, kind of interesting and actually not that negative. I did one that looked at how people can replace their favorite booze without buying from the States, because we know those have all disappeared from provincial liquor stores. So if you're looking to make your old fashioned or your whiskey sour, what are you using? I featured a handful of BC craft distilleries. Fascinating stuff. Like, we're making some really good alcohol right here in the province.
What in the region?
In the region, I actually, and recently, I know the last time we chatted, I told you about my trip to Prince Rupert, and I did go to Port City Spirits in Prince Rupert, which makes amazing alcohol. They've got gin, vodka, a really interesting spirit called Akavit, which Roadhouse is actually right now making an old fashioned with.
Oh, wow.
Because they're kind of experimenting, and you know, Roadhouse, for anyone who doesn't know, is a restaurant here in Smithers. They're kind of experimenting with how to replace, you know, their go-to bourbons and that kind of thing. Cool thing about BC craft distilleries, in order to call yourself a craft distillery in BC, you have to use all BC agricultural products.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right? So if you're buying from a craft distillery, you're also supporting farmers.
BC agriculture.
Right. Uh-huh. Even, you know, Port City Distillery in, Port City Spirits in Prince Rupert uses all their booze, include honey from Bulkley Valley Hive and Honey here in town.
No doubt. No doubt.
They're using bugwood bean coffee in a coffee liqueur. And then, yeah, all their grains come from Northeast BC.
Awesome.
Hyper local.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a good news.
Yeah.
Super interesting tariff story. I also looked at what's happening in Kitimat right now as far as, you know, aluminum tariffs.
Yeah.
And things are, yeah, I think, you know, people are concerned, but also feeling like they're producing a really high value product with low emissions. They've got a port right there where they can ship stuff to Asia and Europe. And so I think people are, you know, cautiously optimistic that they can weather the storm.
Yeah. Yeah. That was one thing I was hearing about. Spoke to Phil Gramuth, who's the mayor of Kitimat, you know, and kind of bracing for this business and to see what happens. They also have the LNG coming online. It'll be shipping out its first cargo of LNG before the end of the year. So sometime around August, you know, so there's a lot going on there as well. But, you know, when I spoke to Elcan, they were talking about they're already diverted a shipment to Europe.
You talked to Elcan?
Well, I talked to the BC operations and
they're not commenting on tariffs.
Well, they sent me a little statement, and part of the hope is that they will divert some of that to Europe. That was about a month ago before the tariffs came into effect. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens. Phil Gramuth, the mayor, he seemed pretty optimistic, though.
He's so great.
Yeah, that they'll weather the storm. And obviously, one LNG plant is going to be up and running very soon. And the second one looks like it will be not far behind. So
we're talking about Cedar LNG?
Yeah. So there's plenty going on there. Similarly, I've been looking into the situation in Rupert. The port would not comment about anything because obviously they get a lot of product from China, from Asia, that comes through Prince Rupert and goes to Chicago to be distributed throughout North America. So they wouldn't mention if they're going to see any, you know, light ships or if the trade would slow down any. We'll see if that actually happens, because clearly we don't know at this point. But there are a lot of tariffs also between Canada and China right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
I want to hear what you're learning about Northern Gateway.
Yeah.
This,
so
we thought this project was done, and now there is sort of.
Well, this whole, I mean, as it is right now, it still is done. But the situation, of course, with tariffs and whatnot, this conversation has started to come up again. And it started when about a month ago, 2 months ago almost now, at the end of January, Chief Stuart Phillip from the Union of BC Indian Chiefs had a press conference and had mentioned that he would be somewhat supportive of an idea, an oil pipeline through British Columbia, if it were to happen again, because of we're staring into the abyss, as he put it, the abyss of trade tariffs and things getting more expensive and energy getting more expensive. And that somehow he felt that Trump and the U.S. might try to do this, might try to build an oil pipeline through British Columbia or through Canada. He wasn't very clear. But the next day, he retracted that very quickly and again blanketed, you know, they're totally against any sort of expansion of fossil fuels. We also saw a comment from the Haisla, who, of course, are, you know, backing LNG Canada and Cedar LNG, that they are totally against shipping oil out through their territory. So they're not interested. Marilyn Slett from the Heltzik, she also put out a statement the next day saying, no, this is not going to happen through our territory. Similarly, the Gitgat also, they didn't put out an official statement, but it sounds very similar. They don't want to see those tankers going past their community. So clearly, there's still a lot of this, you know, wall of unity against seeing any oil shipped out of northern British Columbia. We have the tanker ban. But soon after that, Chief Stuart Phillip made that comment, we heard definitely very loud and clear from Danielle Smith, the Premier of Alberta, saying that she thinks Northern Gateway should be built right now, immediately. Clearly, that can't happen because there's a law banning tankers from the North Coast. And I reached out to Enbridge as well, and Enbridge basically said right now they have a lot of capacity that's underused. And that there's better ways to do these types of projects that don't impact the environment and communities.
I think some of these companies, and I think Enbridge, have kind of, and maybe this is their standard line, but I feel like they've kind of hedged, like, well, maybe if the regulations were changed.
Yeah, so that kind of came a little bit later. So about a month ago, the leader of the Conservatives, Pierre Poilievre, started talking about C69. So this is the basically an accumulative effects a bill. So a bill that it's the assessment environmental. It's part of the Environmental Assessment Act, and basically it looks at the accumulative effects of all kinds of different projects in one area. So they basically say that it will kill sort of any project that they try to get off the ground because it's so stringent that it wouldn't allow for very much else if in a place like Kitimat. You have a smelter, you have an LNG port, you probably couldn't build anything else there under C69. However, the companies, Enbridge at least, also put out a statement following that saying, well, if the regulations were different, they would be more interested. Mm-hmm. And TC Energy said something similarly last year. They didn't want to, they told their shareholders they didn't want to spend more than about $6 billion on a capital project. You know, they've had one project that's gone, you know, twice that much, CGL. TC Energy, same thing. You know, that's a pipeline we own. The taxpayers of Canada own that pipeline.
TMX.
TMX, yeah. What did I say?
I think you said
oh, yeah. Sorry. There's so many. Because also what's being talked about right now is Energy East and the XL Keystone XL pipeline as well. These are all pipelines that at one point or another kind of lost traction or were canceled, lost their permits.
Yeah.
And so now it looks like
it's all on the table.
It's all back on the table. Totally.
Yeah.
What I heard from a lot of people in Kitimat and from Prince Rupert, the two places obviously on the coast that would, mm-hmm. you know, see the biggest impact with tankers and all that. They're definitely not wanting to see this happen, but they also said if it did, they'd want to see a refined product, not raw bitumen, which was the original plan with Northern Gateway.
Did you see that letter? Was it maybe the day before yesterday that was signed by a bunch of oil and gas executives calling on the federal politicians, Carney, Polyev, Singh, to declare a national emergency, energy emergency in Canada, and in the national interest to push through some of these projects. It's fascinating. And, you know, you start Googling the names of these execs who have signed on, and like at least a quarter of them are American. And had, you know, in one case he had said just a couple of weeks ago, like, we're fine. We're making lots of profits. We're good. Tariffs aren't going to affect us. And then suddenly it's a national emergency.
Yeah.
So I think anytime there's this upheaval, it's always an opportunity to push these projects ahead.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, I think what we're learning from the South is that things can change so fast, especially depending on who's in power, that politics will actually matter. Who you vote for matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And we'll see that very quickly here.
And yeah, so I guess we're still waiting to hear from Alice Ross and where he currently stands, because Polyev supports Northern Gateway, but in the past, Alice Ross didn't.
Yeah, it was, there's another outfit called the Northern Beat. They have been doing a bunch of reporting here in British Columbia. Some of the reporters are former, Hill reporters in Victoria. They did an interview with Pierre Polyev, and they asked him this question about Northern Gateway specifically. But again, he kind of deflected and talked about C-69. So he didn't directly talk about C-48, which is the Oil Tanker Moratorium Act. He didn't directly talk about, hey, we should build Northern Gateway again. What he was talking about was dismantling C-69, the Assessment Impacts Act. And so it seems like that is a bit of the linchpin to a lot of these projects, because it's not just about Northern Gateway, it's about Energy East, which even now Quebec, François Legault was talking about, hey, you know, that might happen, it could happen. The situation has changed, he said, so we could see an Energy East pipeline going to Quebec and then, you know, sending oil possibly to Europe. The Keystone XL, again, which was going to go through North Dakota there. Same way, as that seems to be on the block again. But it's difficult to tell at this point. You know, we're going to start hearing all of this rhetoric very soon when the election starts. And then we'll probably have a better idea of what we could expect.
Mm-hmm. And so, interestingly, this afternoon, this is my breaking news, the federal government announced $200 million for Cedar LNG.
All right.
Which made me wonder if that's a move to kind of signal that they'll support LNG and maybe differentiate from the Conservatives in their potential support for Northern Gateway.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems
appeal to kind of like the Northeast BC, Northwest. Where are we?
Yeah, North. I think we're in Northwest BC. But it's very curious because speaking to people off the record, kind of background in Rupert, you know, there's several First Nations there that would be very interested in LNG. Years ago with Pacific Northwest LNG, that was a Petronas, a Malaysian owned oil and gas company. They wanted to build an LNG plant on Lilu Island, which, the government itself back in the 70s, basically did a slew of studies showing that was a no-go area for development, or should be a no-go area for development. You know, something like 300 million salmon, you know, all the different populations of the Skeena kind of go through that area and the eelgrass beds. So it was supposedly needed to be a no-go area for development. The community of Lac aux Lambs got a vote twice, and they voted down $1 billion in benefits. There are some strings attached, obviously, but now a lot of that has changed. You know, there are some nations that would, if they were approached, probably buy into an LNG facility.
Mm-hmm.
So very challenging conditions, but again, you know, this is politics in 2025 when you have U.S. tariffs staring you down, and here we go.
I think we're going to hear a lot about this over the next month and a half.
Well, I'm curious, what are both you guys hearing about the federal election? We're basically staring down a federal election. The writ supposedly, reportedly, is going to be dropped on Sunday, and then off to the races for the next few weeks. You know, Prime Minister Carney is probably, he could be one of the shortest lived prime ministers in Canadian history. We'll see what happens. But the polling has changed dramatically over this last month. You know, the Liberals were way behind, about 30 points behind a month ago at the beginning of, more than a month ago at the beginning of February. Now they're neck and neck with the Conservatives. What are you guys hearing?
Well, I haven't heard too much lately, but I think it's fair to say that Taylor Bacharach will run again for the NDP. I think that's fair. And I also think it's probably fair to say that Rod Taylor will run again for the Christian Heritage Party.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he's a staple. But it'll be interesting to see if anybody runs for the Liberals here.
Yeah.
If they'll, you know, send somebody in again like they have in the past, or if anybody will step up to run for the Liberals.
Yeah. I think often they do just parachute somebody in, right? It's I think it's going to come down to a race between Taylor Bacharach and Alice Ross, and I think it'll be very interesting. And I think some of these issues, which are really national issues when we're talking about pipelines and energy development and that kind of thing, that it's going to come down to this riding and those two candidates.
Well, even when you look at the last provincial election with Sharon Hartwell taking over, you know, the Conservative Party taking over here, this riding, I think that surprised a lot of people. I think everybody kind of thought that Nathan Cullen with the NDP sort of had it in the bag. And then, so that might sort of sway federal voters as well, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Might go the other way.
Yeah, possibly.
This has been a strong, like an NDP stronghold.
Yeah.
I think ever since this party existed.
Yeah, since 2003, 2004, before that, there were conservative candidates, both MLAs and MPs. But for the better part of the last 20 years, it's been an NDP stronghold, provincially, federally. Slowly, we've saw the provincial riding of Skeena, which is Kitimat and Terrace. Ron Austin was a longtime MLA there, and he lost his spot. Alice Ross, obviously, and now Claire Ratté. So, you know, now it's flipped back. Clearly, the only solid seat that the NDP have in the north is North Coast, provincially anyway. Still, Tamara Davidson, she had quite a large lead there when she won back in the fall. It'll be interesting to watch how this all plays out. Clearly, the pressure is on for both of these candidates. And I believe that Pierre Poilievre has even toured through here a few times now with Alice Ross. And so it clearly shows that this is a riding that they're very interested in, mm-hmm. and clearly see the path to victory. NDP, generally speaking, nationally, is doing terribly. They're not raising much money. They're way down in the polls. They may get decimated in this next federal election. It's always curious when you see the Bloc kind of coming into third place. So and the Greens as well. I haven't heard of any Green Party candidates here yet.
I haven't heard anything either. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, I suspect next week some of this stuff will get rolling. But it's fascinating to see too how, I mean, it really does seem like the, you know, Pierre Poilievre kind of modeled himself off those Trumpian politics. And I think that's really hurting the Conservative Party.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of people are looking into the mirror and going, oh, is this kind of what do we want in Canada? Generally speaking, we've had more liberal federal governments than we have conservative. But on the same note, you know, we just had a provincial election in Ontario. The voter turnout wasn't super great, but they still, the Conservatives under Doug Ford still got a very healthy majority. Mm-hmm. So it could be a little bit of a precursor, but different dynamics going on.
Ford's really differentiated himself from Poilievre, I think, over the last few weeks or month, though, right? Like, I mean, he's come out so strong against Trump, and we haven't heard that from Poilievre. And I don't know how much of that weighed into the Ontario election results, but it's got to have some bearing, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just quickly, we got a couple of minutes left. So what are you guys looking forward to for this next couple of weeks? Because as we know in the journalistic world and news, your life kind of gets taken over by politics when an election happens. So what are you guys looking forward to in the next couple of weeks here?
I actually love election. Like, election season is so fun, right? There's always news that is, you know, sort of right there in front of you, which is exciting to chase. And going to debates, I think, is always so lively and fun. And I love to see the community come out and listen to people. So I'm actually looking forward to all the debates that'll happen in the near future.
Maybe they should have a debate at the United Church.
They should. It's a beautiful building.
Okay. See what happens.
I should also maybe take a cut from the realtor fees, I think, for
trying
to sell this building.
Good. 3%.
Yes.
Yeah, it'll be fun to dive into the election when the time comes. Don't you want to hear about my ride on the Usk aerial ferry?
Oh, yeah. Tell us quickly. We got 2 minutes.
Before we have to get into the serious stuff. So, yeah, I drove out to Usk this week, and I'm doing the Tyee has this series called Place Detective, where we dive into the history of kind of a local landmark. So my editor suggested I go check out the Usk Ferry, which isn't running right now because the water is too, it's, you know, often too high, too low, whatever. And when that happens, they have this aerial ferry, which is like, basically I was dangling by this tin can over the Skeena River.
It's a bit rickety.
Super cool. So it was a fun way to, like, you know, have a little adventure.
In your vehicle before. No,
you can't take vehicles this time of year when the ferry's not running.
It's a human
so,
cart.
Okay.
Everybody like takes the 25 residents in Usk move their cars across the river and leave them on the other side. And then it's like smaller than this space here. It's like 4 by 8 feet. And that trolleys people back.
So are they, the people that live there, are they totally cut off if that ferry doesn't run?
If the aerial ferry doesn't
run?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
So they kind of have all these contingents. Well, we've had helicopters come in a medical emergency.
Oh, wow.
But it happens. Yeah.
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 Oof. It sounds like a place I would probably enjoy living there, actually. If that was my separation from the outer world, a river and just a little rickety cart,
I'd be down. The ferry operators live right there in the community.
Yeah.
I think they love it.
No doubt.
So anyways, that's what I'm going to do over the next week. And it'll be a nice, like, nice little, you know,
reprieve.
before we get into the thick of the election, I think.
I wonder if the politicians will go over there to door knock.
I hope so.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Good photo op.
I was just thinking that.
Well, good photo op. I think Taylor Bacharach stops in there in his canoe when he does his annual summer canoe trip down the Skeena.
Oh, yeah.
He stops in at Kitsilis Canyon just down the river. So,
well, we'll see if he's still an MP by the summer.
Maybe he won't be stopping in or canoeing down the river in April.
Or just in a different capacity.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all our time today. Thank you so much. And we'll catch you guys in a couple weeks.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, ladies, in a couple
you.
Weeks.
Yeah.
That was fun.